నీచ గ్రహ నీచ గ్రహోజస వీరా కలిం దిగ్విజయే క్వచిత్ నిరపలింగ ధరం శూద్రం గ్రనంథం గోమృతి మిథునం భదా. Once, when Maharaj Parikshit was on his way to conquer the world, he saw that the master of Kali Yuga, who was lower than a Shudra, disguised as a king and herding the legs of a cow and bull. The king at once caught hold of him to deal sufficient punishment. Tonight we are reading from the 16th chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. It is describing the most glorious qualities of Maharaj Parikshit at the time when he was ruling the entire state of this planet. Maharaj Parikshit was the son of Uttara, who was the widowed wife of Abhimanyu, who was the son of Arjuna and Subhadra. In this way, he was perhaps the last of the great rulers of the Kuru dynasty. Being brought up in a family of pure devotees of the Lord, he was raised from the very time of his residence within the womb of his mother to always be remembering Krishna. This is the first and greatest responsibility of every human being, and it is the greatest responsibility in any of our relationships to be a servant of Krishna. When Uttara was attacked by the Brahmastra weapon of Ashwatthama, she knew that this Brahmastra was coming to kill the child within her womb. Being a devotee, she cried out for Krishna to save and protect the child. And Krishna, who never neglects the sincere call of his devotee, appeared within the womb. And Maharaj Parikshit was able to witness the beautiful, beautiful form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And right before his eyes, he saw that with this Sudarshan disc, he destroyed the Brahmastra weapon of Ashwatthama. Because of that crisis, a life or death crisis of Maharaj Parikshit, seeing how the Lord saved him in the most horribly dangerous predicament, he could never forget that beautiful form of the Lord. Nor could he ever forget the gratitude that the Lord had saved his life. Actually, it describes in a later canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that Maharaj Parikshit was actually killed in the womb, but Krishna brought him back to life and allowed him to witness his beautiful transcendental pastime of saving his life. So we can understand so wonderfully through this story that for a devotee, crisis is the stepping stone to higher and deeper realizations of Krishna's supreme mercy. Providing in that crisis, we turn to Krishna. And not only is that benefit for ourselves, but even for those we love. After all, Uttara, being a wonderful devotee herself, when she was having this child, it was to be understood, obvious, that her goal in life was that her child would become a pure devotee of Lord Krishna and would never have to take birth in this material world again. Pitana sasyaj janinina sasyaj. Bhagavatam says that this is the first and greatest responsibility of every parent. You should not even attempt to be a parent or have a child unless you are prepared to raise that child in such a way that that child will never take birth in this material world again. So, as she was nourishing and harboring her child in the womb, this was her feeling. She was a great devotee of Lord Krishna. And here was the worst possible crisis of her life. If that Brahmastra weapon was coming to attack her, it would not have been so bad. But that it was coming to kill her child, it was millions of times more painful for her to have to endure such a threat. And she was helpless. She was helpless to protect her little child. But in that state of utter helplessness, she called out for Krishna. Arjuna, who was her father-in-law, and Draupadi was her mother-in-law, Draupadi had a similar experience. Today in the car, Priyavrat Prabhu was telling us this story of how Dushasana was trying to strip her of her sari, and she was in a helpless condition. She wanted to protect her chastity, not only for herself, but for her husband's as well, because it's a great disgrace for your wife to be unchaste. So to protect her husband's from that embarrassment, as well as to protect the sanctity of her own relationship to Lord Krishna, she was trying to protect herself, but she could not do so. She was helpless. So she threw her arms in the air and cried out. What did she say? Hey Krishna, hey Govinda. And Krishna appeared and supplied an unlimited sari to protect her. So following in the footsteps of her mother-in-law, when Uttara was in this predicament that her child was about to be killed by the mightiest, most powerful weapon in all the universe, the Brahmastra, what could she do but cry out for Krishna? And in the midst of this greatest crisis, this greatest danger, Krishna actually fulfilled her desire. By giving Maharaj Parikshit darshan within the womb, Maharaj Parikshit from that very time became an unalloyed pure devotee of the Lord who could never forget Krishna. Tate nukam bam susamikshamano bunjana evakmet kritam vipakam ridvag bakur vir vidadam namaste jivetya mukti padasadaya bhav. A devotee knows that whenever tragedy, crisis, or difficulty comes into life, this is the greatest opportunity for the highest realizations of Krishna's mercy, if we simply learn to cry out for his shelter at that time. Therefore, devotees welcome such occasions. And this is why it is said in the Bhagavatam that Kali Yuga is worshipped by all the great saints as the best of all yugas. Because at any moment in the age of Kali, we can be put into predicaments of great danger, great calamity or crisis. In Kali Yuga, death can come at any moment. destruction of our reputation, of our wealth, of our family, of everything. It is the nature of this age. And therefore, in no other yuga are people so inclined to completely taking shelter of Krishna's name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. And Kunti Devi, who was Uttara's grandmother-in-law, she was also of the same disposition. She saw so many terrible crises come into her life at the house of Varnataka. They were about to be burned, her children were fed poison, they were cheated in gambling matches, they were banished to the forest for 14 years. But Kunti prayed to Krishna, Vipada Tatra 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 Jagat Guru, that Krishna, these calamities are my life and soul. I pray that you allow them to happen again and again, because in these crises I have nowhere else and no one else to turn to except you. And when I see you, my Lord, birth and death no longer exist. So a devotee should not see with mundane vision. We should not calculate anything by its external appearance. We must know that Krishna is the supreme controller. Tumi Sarveshwareshwara Prajendra Kumara. That he is the controller of all controllers, Prajendra Nandana Kumara, Sri Krishna. Nothing can exist in the entire material or spiritual creation outside of his own will. Not a blade of grass can move without his will. So although sometimes things may appear in our life that are very inconceivable, intolerable, a materialistic person only sees the external situation and tries to somehow or other make some remedy from this crisis. But a devotee cannot see in this way. A devotee may have to deal with the external situation according to its practical need, but his heart is perceiving that just behind this display is Krishna. His loving, all-merciful hand is behind everything that comes into my life. Mahatmanastu mam parata daivim prakritimashyata. That the great souls, they are always worshipping Krishna because they see that his divine energy is always acting upon the devotee. Just like in the monsoon rain seasons, sometimes so much inconvenience. Floods, we get all wet, sometimes our roofs of the house leak, and everything else. It's inconvenient. Tonight there was a nice rainstorm. But factually, it is such rainstorms that supply the earth the food which is necessary to survive. And it's from such rainstorms that such beautiful flowers are growing to offer to Lord Sri Krishna. The rains bring the flowers. We have to see what is behind. And therefore, the definition of a true devotee of the Lord is actually tested in crisis. Anyone can be a nice devotee when things are going well. You don't have to be very serious. If Krishna is just giving you everything you want and everything you like, it's easy to say, Krishna, I love you. You are so nice. You give me everything I like. I'm your servant. But the test of whether we are sincere in Krishna is when Krishna puts us in a situation of crisis, danger, or even tragedy, or even an inconceivable arrangement. If we just hold on to his lotus feet and pray, Krishna, this is your mercy. Otherwise, it could not happen. Please save me. I am your devotee. I'll never give up your loving service. Such a person, liberation is the rightful claim. Such a person, Krishna accepts into the realm of his true devotees. Because Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachyate. Whatever Krishna does is perfect and complete. Kaunteya Pratyajanihi Name Bhakta Pranashyati. And he always protects his devotee. He's always there to uplift his devotee, whatever that devotee situation is in. So we must know that every circumstance that comes into our life is Krishna's divine arrangement to uplift us, if we simply take the opportunity to remember him and seek deeper in our heart shelter of his lotus feet. Maharaj Parikshit, he was a helpless little child. He was an embryo in the womb, the most helpless time of our life. At one time, everyone in this room was an embryo in the womb. What a helpless predicament you were in. An infant child has so much more power to protect himself than an embryo. You're totally 100% dependent on your mother for absolutely every breath. For everything. So in that helpless condition, he saw this mighty Brahmastra weapon coming. And that Brahmastra is powerful enough to destroy the whole planet Earth. It's coming at him. And his mother was praying, Krishna protect him. And because of his mother's helpless prayer, Krishna appeared. And how wonderful. He was able to see Krishna. And from that very moment, he was always seeking Krishna. And his whole life, he was not concerned with childish games. He was always worshipping the deities of Krishna and making offerings to them. Such a devotee. But it was his swadharma, it was his worldly responsibility, and also his service to the Lord, to responsibly take the lead of the whole world by being the king, the Kuru king, which he did. And here we find how such a devotee of the Lord so meticulously performs his ordinary duties in such a way, always in remembrance of the will of God. There is the common misconception that what if my husband, or what if my wife, or what if my child becomes a devotee? Then who will take care of the responsibilities of this, of the family, or of the business, or all of these other things? But we find that a true devotee of the Lord, if it is the will of the Lord, performs his duty more conscientiously than any materialist could possibly do. Because such a soul is motivated by love to do it properly for the welfare, the ultimate spiritual welfare of all living beings. So Maharaj Parikshit, he personally he personally would get on his chariot, driven by mighty horses, and he would travel the whole world, looking to see if everything was in order, if everyone was being properly protected, if the religious principles, which were absolutely one with the laws of the state, were being followed. There is no question of any government making laws of the state that can possibly be contrary to religious principles if they are truly civilized. How can we betray the laws of God? The kings of the past were called Rajarshis, which means they were actually saints. Why were they saints? Because they were upholding Dharma. That was their first and foremost responsibility to the world. Maharaj Parikshit was fearless. He was not sitting in a highly protected place with all sorts of security guards, just sending, dispatching various soldiers, armies, or emissaries to see how everything was. People cannot trust such spiritual leaders. But Maharaj Parikshit, in order to gain everyone's complete faith, he himself personally went out with his sword to uphold justice and to protect the innocent. And during his travels, it is said that this incident took place just outside the border of what was then Bharatvarsha, or India. Now, at one time, the whole planet was Bharatvarsha. But at this particular time, it is explained, it was just on the border of the Sindhu province, where is now modern-day Afghanistan. That was at that time just where Pakistan used to be India, just outside. So he was at that place, and he saw there was someone dressed as a king. But he didn't have any of the qualities of a king. He was a very low, demoniac person with evil qualities. And he was beating with a stick a cow and a bull who were standing innocent. According to the Shastra, we must understand the true meaning of Varnashram Dharma. Chaturvana mayastristam gunakama vivagasham. And it is considered the responsibility of the king to make sure that each person within his varna and when it's within his ashram is performing it correctly, his duties. The four varnas and four ashrams, which have been grossly perverted by this modern-day caste system, which is simply based on one's birth, has little to do with the scientific process that is explained by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. One is supposed to perform his particular duties not according to birth, but according to one's nature, according to one's activities, guna and karma, and one's qualities. There's a story in the Shastra about the great sage Gautama Muni. And one time, a young boy, his name was Satyakama. Do you know this story? He approached him for initiation. He said, "Will you be my guru? Please give me diksha." And Gautama Muni said that, "I only initiate Brahmins." "Are you a Brahmin? Tell me, who is your father?" And Satyakama said, "I do not know who my father is." So Gautama Muni says, well, go home and ask your mother who your father was. So he went home and talked to his mother, said, who is my father? She said, I do not know, because by profession, I'm a prostitute, which is an activity of the Shudra class by caste. Said, and so many people, it could be any of them, I have no idea who your father is. So Satyakama went back to Gautama Muni, and Gautama Muni said, so, what have you discovered? He said, Maharaji, I don't know who my father is because my mother's a prostitute and she had sex with so many men and I don't know, even she doesn't know. And Gautama Muni said, ah, you are a Brahmin because you are so truthful that you are willing to tell me this. You are so simple, so straightforward, and so honest. This is the quality of a Brahmin. So I will accept you as my disciple. A Brahmin is one who is truthful under all circumstances. And anyone who has that quality should be accepted with that respect. It has nothing to do necessarily with one's birth. Of course, if we take birth in an environment, there's more of a chance that by our parents and by our relatives' influences, we can develop those qualities. But in and of themselves, birth means nothing. Just like Guru Maharaj used to say, if you're born in a family of doctors, you have the most facility to become a doctor. But if you don't go to medical school and you don't pass your exams, no one will accept you as a doctor. Human life, as explained by Lord Krishna, civilization in human life, is judged by qualification. So although Kali was dressed in the guise of a king, he was behaving contrary to how a king should act. And therefore Maharaj Parikshit became very furious. He was herding a cow. The king is responsible for all praja. Praja means anyone who has taken birth in that kingdom must be protected and given the chance for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And even an insignificant ant should have his rights protected in the same way as a human being. What to speak of the cow? Today, all over the world, the cow is being mercilessly slaughtered. I remember when I was at New Vrindavan, at one time, one of my first services was milking cows and taking care of cows. I would have a little stick and I would bring them to the pastures and take them to places where they can eat nice grasses and make sure they didn't eat anything that was not unhealthy growing on trees. And bring them back and milk them and brush them and wash them and like that. Simple service. For many years I did like this. But you see, I was not brought up in a cowherd community. I was, by the grace of my Gurudev, given this responsibility for some years. And nobody else at New Vrindavan was brought up in a cowherd community. We were all just sent there by Guru Maharaj. And we had really no idea about cows. So we wanted to know how long a cow lives. Because that's an important question. in taking care of its life, we should have some approximation. Do they live 5 years or 10 years or 30 years or 100 years? We didn't know. We were just taking care of them and giving them grass and milking them. So one neighbor whose family had been taking care of cows, a dairy farm, for generations and generations and generations, we asked him, what is the lifespan of a cow? This man had about 150 cows. He said, I don't know. I said, how you don't know? How long have... This man was about 65 years old. He's been taking care of cows since he was a teenager. How you don't know? He said, as soon as their milk production becomes less than it costs to take care of them, we send them for slaughter. He said, in fact, I never met anybody who kept a cow alive longer than that point. Of course, about 70% of the cows are not even for milk. They're just being fed for that purpose alone. But even those that are protected for milk, they're only being protected to the point of time where they can be exploited. But beyond that, in fact, as far as I know, until Srila Prabhupada ordered Kirtanananda Maharaj Bhaktipat to start New Vrindavan, there was probably not a single cow in the country of America that was allowed to live its life. And the same cruelty is even infecting the land of India, the land of Dharma, and so many justifications. But here we find Maharaj Parikshit. He was a real king. He was a real leader. When he saw that this cow was getting its legs beaten and bull, he took his sword and was about to kill this pretentious king named Kali. He was so angry. Justice must be served. And Kali, knowing that Maharaj Parikshit could not be challenged, he was empowered by God. He became very superficially humble. And he said, my dear king, you are protecting all citizens. You are giving everyone shelter. Well, now I am taking shelter of you. So please, I am also a citizen. I'm also praja. I'm also born in your kingdom. So you kindly give protection to me. And Maharaj Parikshit, he said, all right. I will not kill you, because I cannot kill someone who has taken shelter. But you cannot do anything anymore in my kingdom like this. And Kali begged, you must give me some place to do my duty. My duty is to keep people in illusion, to impel people to sinful activities, to cause havoc to religion. That is my nature. You must give me some place. Maharaj Parikshit, as a kind king, he said, all right. Wherever there is the slaughter of innocent animals, you reign supreme. Why we say no meat eating? Not just the sentiment. Two reasons. One is you are taking part in the murder of a life-loving, innocent creature who deserves to live as much as your own children. And you're sponsoring, supporting the murderer, the bloodshed and the pain that they endure. And two, by taking part in such an activity, you are actually, directly, you are supporting the evil, cruel power of Kali. Because Kali is the king who reigns supreme wherever such activities are taking place. And wherever there is Kali, there is the degradation of all religious principles. Second place, wherever there is illicit sex, wherever people like the lower species are engaging in this very, very sacred and holy samskara activity for the purpose of simply satisfying their lusty desires without any regulation or discrimination. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that I am sex life according to religious principle. Sex life for the purpose of procreating a God-conscious child in conjunction with the Garbhadhan samskara is considered a sacrifice, a holy sacrifice, which is actually purifying. It is divine. But to misuse that God-given power and potency that is within males and females without any regulation, without consideration of religious principles, outside of sanctified married life, we should know that wherever such activities take place, it is the realm of Kali. Third place, wherever there is the taking of intoxications. Do you know how terribly unfortunate we are when we subject ourselves to the all-powerful rule of Kali? When we come under his jurisdiction? Do you know how serious that is? And yet our society is so misled and so unfortunate that they just take intoxications as just a very pleasurable social interaction. Huh? One of our devotees was telling me that his relative, when they're at parties where they are serving liquor, he puts tulsi leaf on the liquor and drinks and says some mantra to offer it to the Lord. What? Tulsi? Tulsi Devi is an expansion of an expansion of Sri Radharani. She's a pure devotee of the Lord. She's come to earth only to offer her beautiful, fragrant leaves to the lotus feet of Krishna. And we're drowning her in poison, liquor, in the name of God. Intoxication, whether it be through drugs, whether it be through alcohol, whether it be through tobacco, any of these dangerous habit-forming activities, they take away our godly qualities. They cover us over into deep illusion and ignorance. And wherever such actions take place, you should know it is the realm of Kali. It is the realm of irreligion. And wherever there is gambling, everything is the property of the Lord. Whatever we have, by his grace, we must utilize very carefully, very conscientiously, for its proper purpose. We have no right to risk and to gamble with what God has given us. And gambling creates an intoxicating fever. It creates intense greed. We want so much for so little. Wherever such gambling takes place, it is the abode of Kali. And why Kali Yuga is progressing so much? Because these four sinful activities are progressing so much. To the degree people indulge in these four irreligious activities, to that degree, Kali takes control of the world, individually and collectively. At that time, because Parikshit Maharaj was such a king, and everyone trusted him and loved him so much, nobody wanted to do any of these things. Everyone wanted to live according to religious principles, and anyone that didn't was scared to death because they knew if anywhere they were to break these principles, Maharaj Parikshit would be right there to punish them. So Kali said, "My dear king, there is no such thing as illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, or gambling in the whole world, because you're the king. So give me some place to live." He said, "All right. Wherever there is the greed to accumulate wealth, gold, wherever that greed to accumulate excess wealth is, these other things will naturally follow." And Kali was very happy with that benediction. "Yes. Thank you very much." And what is the nature of Kali? That he creates quarrel and hypocrisy. And we see, wherever these five things take place, there will be quarrel and hypocrisy. Did you ever see where people gamble? They have to quarrel. Because they don't trust each other. Because they're intoxicated by greed. Whoever there is, what hypocrisy it is to take another person's life because you like the taste of its flesh. Illicit sex in the Western countries, generally the illicit sex, they test each other for so many months, and then if they feel that this is nice, then they'll decide to get married. This is the process in the Western world. Marriage is not the beginning. Marriage is something that goes way down the line. After everything else is done, then why don't we just make it official? All right, very nice. That's the way it is. 66% are divorces within 3 years. And why do people divorce? They must be doing some quarreling. There must be a lot of hypocrisy. Intoxications, the greatest number one reason for murder, killing in America is crimes based on drugs. Do you know what the biggest money-making industry in the world is? Illicit drugs. Bigger than textiles, bigger than oil. The most biggest billion-dollar profit-making industry is illegal drug selling on the whole planet. And most of the big crimes in the Western world, murders, by the tens and thousands, hundreds and thousands every year, are based on this. They're all intoxicated themselves, and they're greedy to keep everybody under their spell of intoxication and fighting over who has the right to sell in this place or that place. So much quarrel and hypocrisy. And there's another place where Kali rules. Wherever there is too much greed for gold or for material wealth, people fight amongst each other. They lie against each other. So much hypocrisy, so much quarrel, that we find not only all over the world, but even in this great land of India, families that for generations have been noble and pious, they hate each other. They won't even talk to each other, quarreling over whose money is whose. And in one sense, we see that the situation is pervading the whole world, especially these big cities. And what to do? We must see the purpose of the Lord behind even all of this degradation, frustration, quarrel, hypocrisy, envy amongst living beings. And even amongst religions, there's so much quarrel and hypocrisy between the religions. And there's even so much quarrel and hypocrisy within each religion. Kali Yuga is so thorough and complete. But the Lord is so merciful. He has descended within this age of Kali personally in his most munificent and merciful form, just to give everyone the means to transcend all the sufferings and miseries and implications of the age of Kali. Lord Krishna appeared in the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he is the Yuga Avatar who has come with the Yuga Dharma. Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatirangyata. That only the name of Hari, the name of Hari, only the name of Hari can counteract the effects of this age of Kali. Kalyar dosa nide ajan asti heka mahan guna, kirtanat eva krishnasya mukta sanga param brajet. Maharaj Parikshit, even he was subjected to the influence of Kali Yuga. A person who was born in a Brahmin family, who was the son of a very qualified, pure-hearted Brahmin named Sringi, he had mistaken Maharaj Parikshit's intentions, and he cursed him to die in 7 days. Such a king, who even Kali surrendered to, ultimately came under the influence of Kali. But how did he respond? No problem. It's Krishna's grace. I'm cursed to die in 7 days? What would you do if you were cursed to die in 7 days and you knew it would happen? Would you be happy? Would you be scared? Would you start cursing God? Why are you doing this to me? I'm your devotee. I don't deserve this. Maharaj Parikshit said, Krishna, thank you very much. You are inviting me back home, back to Godhead. I'm ready. Let me spend these last 7 days hearing your divine glories. And Shukadev Goswami spoke Srimad Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj after he was cursed. This is another example of how the worst crisis becomes the greatest benediction for a devotee because he remembers Krishna. Actually, if Maharaj Parikshit was not cursed to die in 7 days, we would not have the Srimad Bhagavatam. So although this was a terrible crisis, can you imagine how the whole world reacted? That here's the greatest king, who's our leader. I remember when I was a child, I was 12 years old when John F. Kennedy was shot and killed. And the whole country was shocked, devastated, crying. In those days, people actually had some respect for their leaders. I remember I was sitting in my classroom, and the principal announced it, and everyone in the class started crying. Even I started crying. I didn't even know who he was, but I figured it must be bad because everyone else is crying. Even the teacher was crying. There was a sense of feeling. It was a tremendous tragedy, crisis. Can you imagine a king like Parikshit? When the kingdom found out he was about to die in 7 days, it was a tremendous crisis. Everyone must have been, this is terrible. What are we going to do? Our leader, he's like our father. And all the great saints and sages assembled to be with him at that time. And Shukadeva Goswami spoke the Bhagavatam. The situation that appeared the most dark, terrible crisis imaginable, Krishna's purpose behind it was glorious. To give liberation to the whole world for all time to come through the Srimad Bhagavatam. What to speak of promoting Parikshit Maharaj back home, back to Godhead. But Shukadeva Goswami himself explained to Maharaj Parikshit this verse. Kalera dosa nide rajan asti heku mahanguna kirtanat eva krishnasya mukta sangha param braje. My dear King Rajan, this age of Kali is an ocean of faults. It's an ocean of bad qualities. There's danger at every step. Due to sinful activities of people, there's so many disturbances. There are earthquakes, there are floods, there are cyclones, hurricanes, tornadoes, droughts, wars, crime, diseases spreading everywhere like anything. And people have practically no sense of God consciousness. They're lazy spiritually. They have time for everything except their spiritual lives. But there's one benediction. And this one benediction makes this age of Kali glorious and worshipable. Because anyone who sincerely and helplessly cries out the name of Krishna regularly, that person will attain the perfection of liberation. Kali Kale Namarupe Krishna Avatar. That in this age of Kali Yuga, Krishna has incarnated within his name. And how wonderful. All the power and glory of Krishna is within his name. And therefore, Lord Chaitanya explained that the prime benediction for all humanity is to come together amongst the Lord's devotees to chant the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. And the more difficult things come in our life, the more inconceivable the problems appear before us, the more helpless material nature puts us in those situations, the more facility, the more opportunity we have to find shelter in the beautiful sound of Krishna's name. Sometimes devotees ask that Queen Kunti prayed for calamities so that she could cry out Krishna's name more sincerely. Should we pray for such calamities? How many of us are willing to do it? And if you do, Krishna will answer your prayer. I say, you don't have to pray for calamities in this age of Kali Yuga. They will come whether you pray or don't pray. Just pray, my dear Lord, whatever happens, let me always remember you. Let me always be in the association of your devotees and let me always be taking shelter of your name.